The Internet. The Final Frontier.
Well, hello. You're listening to an interview with a webcomic artist recorded at SPX. It's SPXplosion on Boldly Going Nowhere. We hope you find it both informative and entertaining. I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
I'm Colin Kakamas.
And I'm Sean Holmes.
And you just got to the good part. Strap in and sit tight, because we are boldly going nowhere.
All right, continuing our webcomic series here at SPX.
SPXplosion.
SPXplosion on Boldly Going Nowhere. We are extremely excited to have one, Jeff Jacks, the creator of Questionable Content, here with us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
All right, how are you enjoying SPX this
weekend?
It's
been a very good time. It's, I think my fifth or sixth year, and it gets bigger and better every year.
So I think it would be an understatement to say that you are a popular artist here at this convention. But it's interesting that, you know, we go out on the street and ask the random, you know, the average person how many webcomics he or she is familiar with. It's probably going to be somewhere around zero. You know, so it's interesting that we come in here, you know, like this micro celebrity, and then go out, go about your business. I mean, how do you characterize the webcomics industry? It's such a, you know, it's a tight group, you know.
Well, it's funny because, you know, it hasn't really been an industry for very long. I mean, it's not much of one yet anyway. There I would say maybe 100 people total who are doing it as like their full-time jobs, and even fewer of those where it's like, you know, the sole income in the household or anything like that. But we are starting to see some, you know, actual, you know, not only web comics as businesses, but businesses that are sprouting up to support them, like, you know, Tapato Co., who does all my merchandise and order fulfillment and things like that, or, you know, Blind Ferret, who also does that for a bunch of other strips and things like that. It is a very, you know, small and pretty tight-knit community. We all know each other. We all do the same conventions together. There are a whole bunch of us that live up in Western Massachusetts, you know, nearby each other. So it's pretty tight-knit, and it's growing, but it's definitely a very kind of... It's a small industry at this point.
Yeah. Frank Gibson of Tiny Kitten Teeth, he described it as a polite, competitive environment, which I really liked. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think, you know, it's an artistic, you know, environment, and so everybody is doing things that tend to be, you know, very different, you know, sometimes radically different from each other, and other times, you know, there are some similarities between, you know, one strip and the next, and so a lot of us, you know, there's a fair bit of audience crossover between, you know, webcomics as a whole, but the majority of those of us who are fortunate enough to have really big audiences, you know, there's a core chunk of everybody who, you know, they don't really read any other strip other than, you know, maybe one or two. Like, I think your average webcomic reader will probably read, you know, like, yeah, they read XKCD and maybe Penny Arcade, and, you know, they've heard of other strips, but they haven't really checked them out that much or anything. So while there is crossover, it's not like it's a zero-sum game where we're all competing for the same pool of money.
Well, for those who may not be familiar with you and your work, could you explain who you are and what you do?
My name's Jeff Jacks. I do the comic Questionable Content. It's a daily kind of slice of life, romantic comedy strip with, you know, light science fiction elements and things like that. It's been my full time job for 7 years now, I've been fortunate enough to have a lot of success with it.
He's living the dream.
Yes, the dream that I never dreamed that I would live.
Indeed.
So what are some of your influences in creating Questionable Content and in the work that you do? I know you're also a musician as well. You put up tracks under Death Mole.
Yeah. As far as comics go, when I was starting out, I think the two strips that were the most direct influences on me were John Allison's Scary Ground. That was my favorite strip for years and years. And Mitch Clem's Nothing Nice to Say, which he actually just recently relaunched. Those both kind of shaped what I wanted to do in comics and gave me, I think, a good frame of reference for like what you could do and what kind of stories you could tell and what kind of jokes you could pull off. These days, I pull a lot of influence from all over the place. I read a lot of manga and indie comics and things like that, so I pull stuff from that. I listen to a lot of music, and that has both a direct and indirect influence. So these days, it's a more broad thing, as opposed to being really focused on one or two specific works that I pull from. Musically, Death Mole is, it's instrumental post-metal, so, Isis, the people who kind of invented that genre, are obviously fairly high up the scale, but I pull from a lot of other things as well, straight-up death metal, Gojira or Behemoth, and then more proggy things like Opeth, and even, shoegazer and indie rock bands are a big influence as well, just getting the overall wash of sound thing going.
Yeah, and I mean, music is a huge role in QC, you might even say a central role, and I sort of handle the music side of this podcast, and I will say that a lot of the bands that I listen to now I actually discovered through your recommended listening page.
Well, I'm glad, way back early on,
Arcade Fire, The Decemberists, which is now my favorite band, Mogwai, and so it was really cool to have this source not only for just daily entertainment but also for bands that I had not heard of to check them out. Could you talk a little bit about how your passion for music plays into the storytelling and into the way you frame the characters and the situations in QC?
Yeah, that was always kind of a central thing, especially earlier on in the comic. I'm trained in music. I have a degree in music. It's always been one of the greatest parts of my life. And one of my favorite things to do is share music that I like with other people. So it was always kind of a goal for me to have a venue where I could, spread the word about bands that I like and music that I enjoy. And so it feels really good to have introduced people to, musicians whose work I enjoy and things like that. It feels good to be kind of giving back to that, to that community, considering how much enjoyment I've gotten out of those bands myself over the years.
So one of the big things we've been talking about this weekend with these other interviews is sort of the dynamic of webcomics as a means of telling stories and as a means of sort of displaying artwork. And for you, I guess which comes first, the art or the story? Which is the most important element of the webcomic?
For me, the story always has to come first. I mean, I can't draw a comic until I've got it written out. And I wouldn't really know what I was doing if it weren't for my ongoing continuity and things like that. I've never really been much good at writing, one-off gag strips. So for me, having, a past, a present, and a future that I kind of aim towards has been really important and helpful for doing my work. And I think, I think I've always been fairly competent at, the writing aspect of things. The art, obviously, I didn't know what I was doing when I was starting out, and I still largely don't today, but it's gotten better. Whereas I think the quality of the writing has been pretty consistent throughout. So the writing is always the most important part of it for me. I think that's what keeps people coming back to the comic.
Well, yeah. Well, my next question was actually going to be about the artwork, because going to that side of things, if we look at your strip, and also, someone like John Allison, for example, where it's a very long-running strip, and the visual style has changed, in your case, dramatically from beginning to end. And now it seems like you settled into a style that you like, but are you still, changing things up, refining things? Do you see, if the comic is, hopefully still going 5-10 years from now, do you think it'll still look the same? You think it'll look as different now as it did 5 years before that?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, a lot of the more radical changes coming early on were because, I was figuring out how to do very basic things. And at this point, I feel like I've got a lot of the very basic anatomy and composition stuff down. So these days, it's more about, refining what I know and making subtle changes and things like that. nowadays, instead of completely drawing faces in a different way, it's more about like, oh, okay, I've been drawing their heads a little bit too big, so I need to start working on making those a little more proportional. So there are still a lot of changes over time, but I think they're just more subtle. And I have no distance from my own work, so I don't even really know if they're noticeable to the average reader. But yeah, I can look at stuff that I did a week ago and see how what I'm drawing now is different. But, you know, I have kind of settled into a style, and I'm pretty happy with where it's going. But I do see it continuing to change. And for all I know, I will, you know, get sick of it and scrap it and start drawing entirely differently, you know, sure, in 2 days. I never really know for sure.
So QC is a comic that really revolves around its characters. It's a very character-driven story. And, you know, it's, as anyone who reads QC can point out, very heavy on female characters. And so it's interesting that the main character is sort of, you know, this guy surrounded by women in his life. And obviously the question arises, how much of this is drawn from personal experience? How much of these characters come from people you know? And how much of this is you working out, you know, things on paper or on the computer screen, as it were?
Well, the characters are all, you know, fictional. None of them are really based on anybody I know, but they all came out of my head. So they've all got different aspects of my personality and neuroses and, you know, whatever mixed in. You know, I think Martin is probably, you know, the most like me, but he's also a lot less like me than I think your average reader might guess. You know, he's a lot more spineless and less sure of himself and things like that. And some of that has to do with the fact that, you know, I'm just older than he is now, and so I've got a different perspective on things than somebody in their early 20s might. A lot of it is just, you know, sometimes characters just show up fully formed, like, out of the blue. Like, Marigold came out of nowhere, and I immediately knew what her deal would be and how she'd kind of fit in with the cast. And then other ones I kind of have to figure out as I go along, and sometimes that takes years. I mean, I'm still not completely happy with, you know, how I've characterized, like, Dora or Ty yet. So it's an ongoing process with a lot of them. They all just represent, you know, different aspects of me, I guess, and then it's fun to kind of watch them bounce off of each other and see how that goes.
Yeah, I mean, these characters are so fully formed. Do you ever, you know, find yourself at points, like, surprised at something one of your characters did? Like,
yeah, frequently, you know, I don't hard write out every single plot point in the strip. I do have, like, vague ideas that I aim for over the long term. But frequently, they will take things in a totally different direction. And I'll be like, oh, wow, I would not have expected this to work better than what I thought was going to happen. Like, the Martin and Faye breakup ended up going in a completely different direction than I had originally written it, just because, you know, I wrote out 10 scripts or whatever, and then the next day, I was like, these don't really make sense. And then suddenly something clicked and it, you know, veered off into what I think was a little bit, you know, better and more realistic for those guys. So, yeah, they frequently do, you know, surprise me a little bit. Yeah.
Well, Colin, I know you definitely have some questions for Jeff. Is there anything that you wanted that was really, you know, burning in your soul that you had to get out? Because, you know, got to wrap this interview up soon. But
Right. Definitely, I remember in earlier strips, I remember you had made allusions to newspaper comic strips. I remember Bloom County references.
Yeah.
Were you a fan of newspaper comics earlier on?
Yeah, that's really what I grew up on. I was never a comic book kid. I grew up, you know, you start out reading Garfield and Peanuts, and then you graduate to, you know, Calvin and Hobbes and The Far Side. And then I think Bloom County has been probably the biggest long-term influence on my strip, because it was an ensemble cast with, you know, at least somewhat of a continuity, and people changed and characters left and came back. So I think that taught me a lot about what you could do in a fairly, you know, limited four-panel format, but mm-hmm. with an ongoing story. So I think that was a pretty big influence on me. And I still read, you know, a few newspaper strips, even though that genre is largely moribund these days. But there are still a few good things out there, like Get Fuzzy or Pearls Before Swine, things like that.
Yeah. So. Let's see. There was another question. You know, it's funny. I remember I've been prepping myself for this interview, like, all day. But now that he's actually here in front of me, I'm like...
Isn't that always the way of things?
I know, right? I'm starting to space out. I'm like, oh, my God.
Colin was pretty excited about this interview.
Well, yeah, like I said, I mean, I tell a lot of people this. You're actually one of my favorite writers, if not my favorite writer.
Oh. And no, I mean, I never get tired of hearing that for some reason.
Well,
I wonder why.
And that's just not, you know, a webcomic artist. I mean, across the gamut, mm-hmm. really. And it's... You know, it's definitely just because, I mean, you cover a lot of, I mean, like when you first started out, it was, you know, strictly, you know, you were hitting music and that was good. I mean, that's enjoyable. But then, you know, you throw in the Dune references,
and then
serious storylines. Now, I'll admit, in webcomics, you know, sometimes serious storylines, you know, they can detract or completely throw, you know, a webcomic off from its main fan base. I remember... off the top of my head, Control-Alt-Delete, you know, a few months back. But I remember, you know, reading the when Martin and Faye ended up not getting together. I remember that, like, that being the point where I was like, holy crap, this is the real deal. I mean, I remember, like, reading that. I remember, I think it was, I started there.
Uh-huh.
I mean, right when Martin and Faye were, right when that conversation started, when, it was pretty apparent they weren't going to get together.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, after reading those few panels, I remember going back and going through the entire archive up to that point in like a couple of hours. I was like, I got to get more of this.
I think it's very difficult to do, you know, serious, you know, kind of darker things well in a comic that's primarily humor-based. And I think I was successful at least to some extent. That seems to be the long-term thing. Whether I'm ever going to do anything that dark and intense again is kind of doubtful, but who knows. But I've tried to sort of broaden the focus of the strip over time. You know, like when we started out, it was very much focused just on Martin and Pint Size and then Faye. But over the years, as the cast has gotten bigger and more diverse, I think the stories have as well. And at this point, you know, Martin isn't even really the main character anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that's been a key to the kind of longevity of my strip as well. It hasn't really, at least I like to think that it hasn't stagnated too badly because I keep kind of jumping around a lot. And that's something that I aim for over time.
I think as readers, we can all assure you that it
yeah,
is
it
not.
Hasn't.
And we all definitely look forward to seeing where the story is going. Jeff, it has been great talking to you. Is there anything you'd like to plug? Any side projects, new releases, anything coming out that you want to...
The second print collection of my strips featuring the Martin and Faye talk that you just mentioned has just come out. It's available online at my Topotico store, which you can visit at topotico.com/QC. And that's about it.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. Thank you for boldly going nowhere.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Boldly Going Nowhere is a Los Tres Monos production. For more podcasting goodness, check us out at boldlygoingnowhere.podomatic.com.
Check out my podcast, BNS Reviews, at bnsreviews.podomatic.com.
Or if you're into the social networking scene, look up either BS Reviews or Boldly Going Nowhere Podcasts at Facebook or Twitter.